TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Or how about trying this one on for size? Conduits of Trouble. Chip Scoggins, Star Tribune sports columnist, and Zolgad. We do this every week, talking about a variety of things in Minnesota sports. Chip was in Seattle for what was a thoroughly entertaining Vikings loss on Sunday. Tell me this, Chip Scoggins. What's harder to get your head wrapped around? U.S. Bank Stadium empty for a football game or Seattle? Because that place is, for an outdoor stadium, ordinarily absolutely rocking.
Yeah, I think Seattle, just because it's become, I mean, I think most people look at U.S. Bank Stadium as loud, but I think Seattle and Kansas City are kind of the two that everybody looks at as being, you know, the quintessential home field advantage. So, yeah, it was weird. I mean, they still raised the 12 banner before they came. You know how I mean, that place just goes nuts when they do it. But they still had somebody up there that hoisted the 12 flag, and it was just dead silent. So it was bizarre, because every time we've been there, and we've been there a lot, you know, that's one of those places where it just, you walk out of there and you felt like you've experienced something just because of how loud it is.
Well, yeah, it's great. All right, so your thoughts about the whole late game strategy decisions from Zim, from going for it to then, obviously, Madison didn't get it, and Seattle drives 94 yards for a touchdown. In the moment, did you like the call on fourth and inches?
Yeah, when at the 2-minute warning, I tweeted out, go for it. I mean, you absolutely have to go for it. So that was my first guess, and for a lot of reasons, Judd. I mean, one, you're 1-3, right? And you got a chance to beat a team on the road at their place that's undefeated. It wasn't a full yard. It was a couple of feet that you needed. The offense had been pounding the ball on the ground. Seattle, I didn't, you know, really know how bad their defense is. They're not good at all, Judd.
They're awful, Chip.
They're dead last in the NFL in yards allowed, so it's not like that's not the Legion of Boom that you're doing that against, you know. And so, I mean, my first guess was go for it. I mean, you can end the game and don't even give Russell Wilson a chance to beat you.
Exactly. Yes.
So, to me, I thought it was the absolute right call. And even though it didn't work out, I'll still say it's the right call.
That defense, Chip, I can't put into words. Like, I knew it wasn't good, but I think that they were, if I'm not mistaken, they were last in the league in total defense in yardage allowed. They were last in the league in passing yards, okay?
400 yards, Jeff.
But they were
400 a game.
But they were third against the run. So I thought, okay, they're not bad against the run. I never thought there was any time, basically until Madison got stopped, there was any time where they looked even competent. I mean, they broke up some plays, but my God, they you know, I mean, Wilson fixes a ton of your problems.
Yeah.
But I don't know how the Seahawks can be expected to actually make a playoff run with that defense.
No. And, you know, when I saw that they give up 400 yards, over 400 yards passing a game, I thought, well, maybe they're leading a lot and teams have to throw to try to play catch up. And that's probably some of it. But, man, they are just not good on the back end at all.
No.
I mean, it's just there's – and you're so used to seeing just all pro level – secondary guys back there, safeties, corners, and they're just, it just feels like they're easy pickings right now. And so, yeah, you know, that's a lot to put on Russell. As great as he is, and he's probably the MVP right now, that's a lot to put on him to say, okay, make up for a really bad defense too. And he's doing it, but you're right. When they get in the playoffs and they're facing some pretty good defenses, they've got to fix that if they're going to win the Super Bowl.
As a guy who watched the game from the press box, so you could see the entire field, I've got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Where was Justin Jefferson?
Yeah. I mean, I think Kurt went back to locking in on Thielen when they fell behind and it got tight.
Excuse me while I start screaming. I'm going to turn my mic off.
I know. But, you know, in saying that, Judd, I mean, he did make some plays, and then he had those two touches. But it felt like, well, when they scored 21 points in like a minute and a half, it's like you look up and the score is 21-13 all of a sudden. But when it got tight, it felt like Kurt said, okay, I'm going to my guy. I'm trusting one guy. And he just locked in on Thielen. And it worked. I mean, he scored two touchdowns. But I think that's where he just needs more time with Jefferson in situations that are like that, where you felt like, okay, because that game felt a lot different than the Houston game, right?
Yes.
I mean, you're facing an undefeated team. You're on the road. And that's the thing, Judd. And if they had won that game, and now you're coming back to play Atlanta, mm-hmm. and you could go into your bye at 3-3, wouldn't it have changed the narrative of this season a little bit?
Yes.
And how we view this season? I think that game could have changed a lot of how we view this team. Don't you agree?
The narrative, for sure. Agree completely.
I mean, you go from, okay, now it's all about development and some people wanting to tank, to 3-3 going into the bye. And with all the problems that you've had, you're thinking, man, this could be a playoff team now, you know?
And that's a nice win. If you go into Seattle, even with the defense as bad as theirs looked, and they are banged up, but if you go into Seattle in a primetime game on a Sunday night and you come out with, you know, a relatively ugly but effective win, that's a really nice win.
Yeah. And so, that game just had a different feel. And so I think that he fell back into, I'm just trusting Thielen. I don't know. I can't sit here and, you know, broken down the film to see if Seattle did things differently with Jefferson's in terms of blanketing him or whatever. But I think it was more probably Cousins just locking in on Thielen.
Absolutely drives me crazy because the kid is so special. Thielen's a really, really nice, really good player. But Jefferson to me is a dynamic, you know, potentially dynamic playmaking receiver. And mm-hmm. those guys are so, can be, you know, so effective. Dalvin Cook, okay? So here's the conundrum, right? And we've talked about this.
I saw your video, Judd. I saw your video. Yeah. I disagree with you, man.
We've talked about it before, but I mean, I love the kid. He's great. He's fantastic. But the conundrum is, how do you keep him healthy?
Well, that's the conundrum, and it's going to feed... It's going to feed the people that say you never pay a running back or don't pay this running back big money because of injury history. And I disagree, man. I just think it is a conundrum because of his history injury. What's the alternative? You're not going to pay him and let him walk? I mean, look how he's a top five running back, right?
When he's healthy, no question. Oh, this is a difficult discussion.
So you're not going to pay him and let him walk? I mean, Alexander Mattison, I think, is quality running back. I mean, he does good things, but he's not Dalvin, you know.
Well, here's the problem. Given what my quarterback makes, can I afford to pay my running back too?
Well, they're, you know, and all the other guys that are wanting big money too. That is the thing. And how many teams in this league have quarterbacks making huge money and running backs making huge money? Thinking off the top of my head, I'm not sure, but I mean, every quarterback's going to make a certain degree, but obviously Cousins is in a different tax bracket than a lot of quarterbacks. I don't know. It's you're right. Conundrum is the right word, Judd. I mean, so does this reinforce your belief that they should not have given him a contract?
It reinforces my belief, yeah, that he's never going to consistently be able to stay on the field. And look, if he played a position at which I could just pull back his playing time easily, I might be like, okay, that's fine. But I mean, he was on track for 40 touches. Okay.
Yeah.
And I agreed with it because he gives you the chance. No, this is not to me a black and white. I'm just right and you're wrong, or you're right and I'm wrong.
Yeah.
This is actually a great discussion about decisions made, not just on playership, but on your entire, in a salary cap league, the construction of your team.
The thing is, Judd, is this is one of those things where you want it both ways.
Yes.
Because when you watch what Dalvin did against Houston, what he did the week before, and you're thinking, man, this guy is so good and so talented, and he's worth every penny that you gave him. And then as soon as he gets hurt, it's like, well, why do you pay a running back that kind of money? He can't stay healthy. It's like, well, you know, you can't have it one way one week and then another way the next week.
Right.
You're right. I mean, he had 21 touches in that first half, you know.
And he deserves it. Like, he's that good.
Yeah. And I still think when you have a unique talent, which I think he is, you have to pay him. You know, I mean, you're just not in a situation where you'd be like, yeah, we know he's special and he makes our team. He's our best player and he makes our team a lot different, but we're just not going to pay him the money and let him walk. Cause that's, I just don't know that you do that.
I think the Vikings are struggling mightily with overall decisions on contracts. And that's my problem. By the day, I am growing more leery, I guess is the right word, not of the decision to give Cousins the contract originally, but to push the salary cap problems down the road in March a mistake. And look, if you had decided, Kirk, we can't pay you, we're sorry, and in fact, it's going to cause us a year or so of real cap problems, but we are going to pay Dalvin, I would have said, okay, you know what? You made a choice.
Yeah.
But in the Vikings case, it's like they're like, no, let's push it down the road with Kirk and we'll pay Kirk, but then we'll pay Dalvin too. And at some point in time, you just want to sit the boys down and say, gentlemen, you got to make some tough decisions here. And it's also weird, Chip, that the Vikings are operating internally like the window might still be open. And like somebody needs to tell them it closed.
Yeah, and the thing about Dalvin too, Judd, is his contract averaged out to about like $12.5 million.
Yes, sir. Right? Yes.
So it's not like he got Zeke money. It's not like he got.
Yep.
I mean, he's not. He's probably what, fifth or sixth running back now, highest paid.
I think sixth is right. But yeah, he's right around there. That's correct.
So I mean, it's big money. It's not like they're paying him $8 million, but it's not. You know, they didn't go up to that $14-15 million range, which I think Dalvin wanted initially, which was, there was no chance, but you're right. Extending Cousins now looks, obviously like the wrong thing, but could they have done everything they wanted to do contract wise without doing that? Because it did help their cap situation,
no,
right?
They couldn't have, but I guess the question goes back to then, should they have bitten the bullet at that point and made those sacrifices to say, we can't do this, but if the alternative is putting ourselves or committing ourselves to Kirk now more, that's probably a mistake. It's just like they're never willing to make the tough calls.
Well, and it's, Judd, they have so much invested in Cousins that it needs to work out for them. And I think it's just, you're just, like you said, pushing it down the line. The other night, he had some moments where he looked really dang good.
Yeah, but
he also had the two turnovers. And that, you know,
yes, just, yes, just and the fourth
back in,
and just, and unfortunately, Zimmer's decision on the fourth and inches play, which I think we all agree with, okay, overshadowed the, was it a minute and 35 or 55 in which Seattle exploded?
Yeah, and a minute and 54. Yeah,
yeah, and that lost them the game. And I'm sorry, but the Cousins pick is inexcusable based on this. That needs to be a time when your alpha quarterback says, everybody calm down. We're about to have a long drive. I mean, think about that. And then what drives me crazy about Kirk, because it's so predictable, is
comes back.
Exactly. Exactly.
Back it does it. Well, I have Ben Gessling, we were walking out. We were just talking about quarterbacks and how special Russell is. And, you know, everybody can't have a guy like that. But I said, reverse the roles. And it was Cousins that had to go win that game. What do you think happens?
I know what happens.
Think about it. Reverse the roles. And
I know what happens. I saw it.
What's your confidence level?
Chip, I saw it at their own 40 against the Titans. Yeah. I saw it. He threw a Hail Mary pass to Thielen on a play when you still had a ton of time left.
I know.
We saw it.
Yeah, and that's and you talk about you saw a quarterback that could make up for a bad defense. You know, any kind of line protection problems, scramble around, just makes play. I mean, and granted, like I said, there's only one Russell Wilson. It's not like everybody can have one, but it just goes to show you, you know, that you're just not going to get that from your quarterback here.
But you know what the thing was, Chipper? And so Favre, right? So when Favre got the ball, same thing, okay? Mm-hmm. Favre got the ball. You said to yourself internally, this is going to be fun and something's going to happen. Might be good. Yeah. It might be catastrophic, but something's going to happen. When's the last time Kirk got the ball in crunch time? Just like that. When's the last, and you thought to yourself, something's going to happen that was, you know, 50%, it might be great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the thing is like, you go back to the playoff game against the Saints, he did it, but it wasn't like you're sitting there thinking, well, this is a slam dunk, he's going to do it. It's almost like, holy cow, he did it. You know, it's like, it's a shocker where when Russell got that ball back, how many people, and I said it, you know, to myself, it's like, this sucker's over. You know, he's going to lead him down and score here. You just have that feeling about him. And there are certain quarterbacks, I think Rodgers is in that camp. You know, obviously, there's probably four or five. Mahomes is in that you just sort of expect greatness. And you just do not have that feeling here, you know.
And he makes too much a year and eats too much of your cap up for you not to think something good could happen here.
Yeah, and that's the thing. He's being paid.
Yes.
To both make that plays and for, you know, when a guy has that kind of contract, you expect him to play at a certain level and do magical things, and it's just not who he is. You know, he needs conditions to be perfect, and so yeah, it's. You know, you gain a new appreciation when you watch what like Russell Wilson does and how he pulled that out and was just so under control. Even with his fourth down, you still feel like he's going to make a play.
So much fun to watch. So much fun to watch.
I know. So, we talked about the rookie corners last week, Judd, and how, you know, their development. Well, there was another instance, right? Dantzler mistimes his, I assume he mistimed that, right? That the 4th and 10.
Yeah.
Where I think he just misread it.
Yeah.
Not mistimed it, but misread it. But another situation that you're just going to have to deal with.
Didn't bother me. It didn't bother me because it's exactly what I expected. And I still feel like Dantzler and Gladney are improving.
Yeah. Oh, I do too, without a doubt. And one thing I did like, you don't want to get a penalty, but I sort of like when, Metcalf was clearly, I don't know if you saw the replay where he was shoving Gladney and they kind of got in the shoving match there. Mm-hmm. That was good for Gladney, you know, to shove back and kind of stand up because they're going to get tested all year. I mean, these veteran corners or veteran wide receivers are going to both on, you know, pass pattern and stuff like that. But then maybe after a play too where Metcalf was going at him, he stood up for himself. So I think they're definitely improving, but they're still going to be some moments like that where you're like, oh my goodness, he's a rookie, you know?
Oh yeah, of course. To be expected too. What happened to your Vols, my man? I sent you a few texts first half. Yeah. I was texting you. And by the way, Saturday, great college football day, entire day on the couch. It was fantastic. Yep. But I'm texting you because I said your Vols are back. I probably jinxed them.
Yes.
What the heck happened?
Well, we forgot there's two halves. And the quarterback had a couple egregious turnovers, and Georgia's just a lot better.
Sure.
They're a good team. I think they will be right there in the mix for the college football playoff. But we're clearly not at that level. But, yeah, man, Saturday felt like the first time that college football is really back, right? Now, the Big Ten hadn't started. They start next week. But it was fun to have a day where there's just a bunch of kind of crazy games and shootouts and wild finishes, and it felt like normal again.
Mm-hmm. Some good games, too. Fun games.
Very good. Yeah, very good.
So what should the expectation be for the Gophers at this point now? And they start, what, a week from Saturday? I think they've got a 6:30 game. Is that right?
Yeah, against Michigan. Yeah. You know, Judd, it is so hard. Like, if we didn't have the pandemic, I would tell you to have high expectations because you return mostly your whole offense, you know, exception of Ty Johnson, who was a big piece, but you get Rashad back. Defensively, they got so many new faces. I don't know there, Judd. I think they may have some growing pains. They like their athletes. They like the guys they have, but they're, you know, as we see the way Antoine Winfield's playing in NFL, that's going to be a tough guy to replace, you know. And so I don't know, but here's the thing, Judd. Teams are having to play without 10. 15, 20 players.
Yep.
We're seeing games get postponed. You know, the Vandy game, Missouri got postponed. Florida now, it looks like Florida LSU is getting postponed. I think Florida has 24 guys. So this is the thing, Judd. You could show up to the stadium on Saturday and the Gophers say, We're out Tanner Morgan, no Rashad Bateman, no this guy, no that guy. We have nine guys out. And then, you know, you don't know, because with the Big Ten, if you test positive, you're automatically sidelined for 21 days. So that could be three games. Ooh. And if it goes through your locker room, tough. You know, I mean, what do you – so this season could be so disruptive. So to sit here and say, to know, like, you know, that you're going to have all your starters, forget the injuries, just the COVID, I think it's just going to be kind of a luck of the draw in some ways, that who's available for you. And so – it's going to be hard to predict this, because you don't know from week to week who's going to be available to you.
So are college teams concerned about games played, Chipper, here? Or are we just trying to get to a finish point where they can have the rankings and the playoff?
Yeah, but it has to be representative, Judd. I mean,
sure.
You can't play six games and think you should be in the playoff, I don't think. You know, they don't want to have to. Well, the thing about the Big Ten, because they're waiting so late, they're playing 9-9, right? 9 games in 9 weeks. There is no built-in time for, postponements. So if you miss a game, I guess you just miss it, and you're going to have to go by win percentage. The SEC has some time built in, I think, because they started earlier. But, they won. It's all about the college football playoff. I mean, it's such a revenue generator, and that's why the Big Ten came back when they did, because they wanted to get a piece of that, and they feel like Ohio State's, you know, the team that could probably win it. But if you're forced to postpone three games, I don't know, you know, if you don't have enough players some weeks, it like I said, it has to be representative. You have to feel like it's enough of a sample size that the College Football Selection Committee could say, yeah, you know what, they had two games postponed, but they played seven or they played eight. We feel like we know what this team is, you know. But it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how many games get postponed. Because I think it's unrealistic to think every team's going to play every game based on what we're seeing right now.
So Big Ten wise, what in your mind is the least amount of games that can be played and still be considered a representative season for a program?
So if it's 7 or 8, I would think.
Okay.
Don't you? I mean, I just don't think you can play six games and think that's, you know, I would say 7 or 8.
Yeah, I just, I don't know, with college administrators being as odd as they are. I agree completely with what you're saying. I'm curious if they will or not, if that makes sense.
You know, I saw his tweet there, I forgot who it was, Judd, and it's 100% correct. Is, you know, the NFL gets a couple cases and they shut down. I mean, college football, I mean, I think I saw somewhere, did Virginia Tech have not missed 23 players the other game? I mean, that's just staggering, you know. We're seeing, you know, some schools have 8, 10, 12 players not available on game day. It's just, I think you're going to wind up seeing probably less guys redshirt because they just don't have that luxury anymore.
Right.
I mean, I think it's one of those all hands on deck, because from week to week, like I said, with the Big Ten, it's an automatic three games. If you test positive, if somebody on the Gophers test positive, you know, this week, they're missing the first two games. Automatic. No questions about it. No matter, even if they have negative tests. So it's afterwards. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see how teams kind of navigate this.
Yeah. I'm checking out a story from the weekend. It looks like Vandy, Chip Scoggins, had 50 played with only 56 scholarship players in their loss to South Carolina on Saturday. And then, to your point from before, their game against Missouri this coming Saturday has been postponed. So they were down to 56. So yeah, it's going to be, I don't know if the powers that be in college football are going to look at the amount of games played as seriously as the true fans are. They should, for sure. But, you know, if it's the Buckeyes and let's say they play six games, are they going to say, yeah, but the Buckeyes are still really good and look at the winning percentage?
Well, I think if I'm on the selection committee, and you know Ohio State's good, right? And you don't, it's not going to be a newsflash. If they play six games and they, you know, they win all six by 30 points, I think it's and they're all Big Ten games. I think it's reasonable to say, you know, that team's pretty good. They're probably one of the four best. So it's going to be the eye test thing. You know, it's interesting, Judd, there you said they postponed, they had 56. Is, you know, I wonder who makes that call. Is it the conference commissioner? Does the team just say, hey, we had too many of our good players?
That's a great question. Yeah, that's a really good question.
That's
a really good point.
What is the threshold? Because
we've got the wrong 56 guys healthy.
That's right.
These are not good. These are not a good 56 group.
Yeah. Can you say, hey, I don't have my quarterback? Is it?
Well, yeah. Well,
two quarterbacks. What is the threshold and who makes that call? Well, so that's what I'm curious to find out.
So to that point, if the Gophers have a representative amount of players, okay. It's not great, but let's say it goes through the team. And they've got a representative group amount of players, but let's say Bateman and Morgan are down.
Yeah.
Do they try and politic not to play?
Probably, you know.
I mean, it's a good point.
I would think any team that doesn't have its quarterback and best player, I think would probably, now if it's just two players, I don't think it's going to fall on deaf ears. But if you have... You know, if they're in a group of eight, right. I think, you know, but it's you wonder if the other side is going to say, no, wait a second here. You know, we were charged with getting the whole team ready, not just one or two. So it's going to be who makes that call again? Is it Kevin Warren? Is it the schools agree on it, or how does that work? I don't think it's ever been laid out.
We're missing too many good players. We can't play. Sorry, we're not showing up in Columbus.
And the thing is, Judd, is like we talked about it. I don't think you can do a bubble, and the NFL struggling outside of a bubble too, but they're, you know, NFL players are probably not making target runs, or they're not going across campus. They're not hanging out in dorms. They're not hanging out in apartments. They're pretty much going facility home, right?
Yes.
Well, college students aren't doing that. And so you're going to see more spread. And so it, you know, the teams that can avoid it and be the most disciplined. And even that's not foolproof, obviously. It can still infiltrate their, you know, their locker room. But, it's going to be tricky to see how teams can, you know, have as many players available as possible and hopefully avoid an outbreak in their locker room.
Why the plethora of Big Ten Friday night games?
I don't know. It just drives me crazy. Well, I do know. TV.
Of course. Good point. Touche.
When TV was something, they're going to get it when they're, you know, paying the bills. But I hate Friday night football games. It's just, maybe I'm old-fashioned and whatever, but Friday night should be for high schools. You know, I just don't like Friday night football.
Yeah, I just, like one or two of them, I guess, are fine. But the Gophers have, what, three?
Three. Yeah,
and that just seems excessive to me. And I mean, I get it. I guess to your point, yeah, it's TV. But I don't know. I mean,
I guess it's the one thing is, Judd, this year is, you know, fans aren't going, so it's not as big a deal. And fans can't really go to high school football either, so it's not as big a deal. But I hope it doesn't become, you know, in the past, what is the rule typically that every team has to play on Friday once?
The Gophers were going to play the Hawkeyes at TCF Bank Stadium on Friday in the original schedule.
Yeah, so I think I can't remember if every team does it, but you have to, I believe it was, maybe every team has to do it once a season. But three, you know, I hope it doesn't become the norm when, you know, when we do get back to normal and fans are allowed in, because it's just not... I don't know.
I thought there was
college football should be played on Saturday. I'm sorry.
I thought there was a law as well against it being the norm. I thought that there was a deal where ordinarily in ordinary times, Fridays are reserved for high school football. I thought there was a cap on how much colleges could play on Fridays or Big Ten schools could, but I might be wrong about that.
Yeah, it could. You know, I know. God, what was the argument when they came out a couple years ago and said they were going to institute it? And some schools said, we absolutely won't do it. And so they didn't, I don't know if they didn't have to, or they just gave it to
it might have been back. Iowa said they wouldn't. Somebody said because I think the problem was the high school football coaches in that state basically threatened the program.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I don't blame them.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, it's just, you know, it's just, I know it's a TV deal and they pay the bills, so they get to dictate that stuff, but it's just, I'm not a fan at all of that. So
Hey, last thing, sir, before we wrap up here. Your thoughts on the fact that there is clearly in St. Paul a new sheriff in town. Bill Guerin, funny, saw what we've all been talking about for quite some time here. Make no mistake, Bill Guerin is making changes not just to impact this team on the ice and to change up the players, but Bill Guerin is really, in my opinion, making changes with the Wild in a big way, because he saw what we all saw, which was a lot of very comfortable people in that room for a long time. Yeah. And I think he said, I've won a couple Stanley Cups and I've been a captain in this league, and this is not how a potential Stanley Cup champion looks.
Well, you remember a couple of years ago when Craig Leopold changed GMs, he said, we just need tweaks. This roster is ready to win. We just need tweaks.
Yes.
Billy Guerin said, give me a stick of dynamite. we're blowing this sucker up. And it was needed. I mean, you can only, what is it that, you know, you keep, definition of sanity, keep doing the same thing and
yes.
hoping for, and that's what it was. And
yep.
it was, they were too good to think they're going to get a high draft pick, not good enough to think they can win a championship. And that's an awful place to be, right? That's, you know, getting to the playoffs is fun for an organization. You make a little bit of money, but it's not. You probably fool yourself into thinking you're better than you really are. And I, you know, I appreciate Guerin saying, you know what, this isn't great. You had some success, but we're turning it over and like really turning it over and get rid of the core. And, you know, is it going to produce better results? Not guaranteed, but I like what he's doing. I like he's being aggressive. I think he has a vision for what he wants the roster to look like. And he doesn't care about, I don't want this to sound the wrong way, but he doesn't care about people's feelings. You know?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't give a damn, but he's right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like this is. Hey, I'm hired to fix this roster, and this is what I'm doing. And you know, some of these guys were fan favorites and popular, and you know, did some good things here. But it's like, the end result was they didn't win a championship and weren't getting close. So it's time to turn the page. And I like what he's doing.
I feel like the Wild and the Vikings are sort of in similar spots, or were, because I feel, you know, the Vikings, I still think they're going to win seven games.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've gotten to the point in my life where if you're not going to be good, just don't be good, because the draft pick can be so great. Because the Vikings for years, you know, they've been really pretty good and they, mm-hmm. they make the playoffs, Chip, and that's great. That's fantastic. But then one day you wake up and you realize you made the playoffs a lot, but you have not won a lot of games in the playoffs. And there's got to be a different way to do this if your ultimate goal is a championship and not just being a good team.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, you can get comfortable with being good, you know, sometimes you might have to take a step back to really recalibrate and, you know, get the right pieces that you can become a champion. Because ultimately, that's what you're trying to do, right?
Yes.
It's not just make it to the playoffs, but you want to try to win a championship. And, I mean, anybody that looked at the Wild's roster is like, that's a good roster, but it's not they're not going to win a championship with that roster. It's just not. And so, I think they absolutely, and, you know, credit Leopold for, I don't know if he had a tough sell. If Guerin had to have a tough sell with him, I assume the owner's probably ready to do the same thing too. You know, I don't think he's really committed to it, right?
Right.
A few years ago, because he still wanted to get that playoff money. He still felt like that was a team that, you know, if you get in, you never know. But that whole thing, you know, you just get in and you could get hot. I'm not sure I really buy that too much anymore. Do you?
No, and I think probably the best thing that happened to Guerin last year was Craig saw that building start to empty out a bit,
mm-hmm.
and he knew that if you continue to go down this path, fans were basically bailing. And yep. so, because he said the tweak comment, if you recall, that came when they were still consistently selling out games. And I think in his mind, he's like, a little tweak and this place will be packed still and blah. And then we got to last year, pre-pandemic, and there were a lot of games where a lot of good seats were empty. And my guess is Bill said, that's the future, Craig, unless we really hit a reset button here, as opposed to, let's just swap this guy for that guy. So I do think that the value for the Wild and as far as Bill Guerin went, was having an arena that was not filled and basically probably told Craig, this team is really stale. And Craig probably said, yeah, you're right.
And Judd, don't you think that they, because I do think they listen to their fans a lot, that organization. And don't you get the sense that they probably heard this thing is stale and this team's just boring?
You know?
There's not a lot there. And so look at the new, the team that they put out on the ice next year. I don't know how good they were, but I don't think they'll be boring. They got some players that you definitely want to go watch, you know, some young, exciting players and, you know, Kaprizov or Kaprizov, whatever we call him.
Fiala back. Yeah, most definitely. Fiala.
So they have guys now that, you know, it's going to be interesting because of the pandemic and winter crowds coming back, but just on its surface, they have some interesting players now and new players and some players with some, you know, some scoring and some talent. So I think fans will be excited by the changes they have.
I think the smartest thing that Bill did through Dean after firing Bruce, I think the smartest thing that they did was the day that Dean got the job to switch to that up-tempo, faster style and play at pace, because you didn't have to be a hardcore hockey person to see the amount of players that couldn't skate. And so I think that was a message probably a little bit to Craig as well, saying, if you really think that we should keep Eric Staal, I'm going to show you exactly how slow Eric Staal or Koivu is, because that style is fun to watch, but the majority of that team couldn't play it.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty certain that that was a message to a lot of people that probably don't know hockey as well as guys like Dean and Bill Guerin do, that, okay, if we do this, if this is our style, we're going to expose guys here who are, by the way, not bad people. Like, that's never been a thing. But were they comfortable and probably somewhat entitled? Absolutely. That's the Wild's culture, or that had been the Wild's culture.
Yeah, Joe, last thing. What are the odds that Parisi's on the roster on opening night?
So I would say if we weren't in a pandemic, almost zero. But because the salary cap is going to stay flat, who's going to take the contract? And how are you going to do it? I think he would go in a heartbeat if he could go to a team.
A mutual desire, don't you?
I absolutely do. But we're seeing, you know, the market as set right now certainly did not have a ton of big contracts signed because of the pandemic. And so I guess my question with Parisi is, who's going to take on that contract and pay it with a flat salary cap? And I can't think that there's a lot of teams that would do that.
Yeah, you wonder if it won't be an in-season trade next year once you kind of know what the cap's going to be.
Exactly right.
And teams might be wanting to bolster a lineup, you know, with a veteran. Yeah, that probably makes more sense.
Thanks, Chipper. I'll talk to you next week, buddy. Take care. Safe travels, okay?
We'll see you.
All right, bye-bye. Chip Scoggins, Conduits of Trouble. We'll talk to you next week.